Chapter 6. Detective Lieutenant Harry Victor, a lead investigator for the Metro Dade County Police Department, sat back in a swivel chair and studied several photographs taken inside the Prospecteur's control cabin. After several minutes, he raised a pair of rimless glasses over a forehead that slipped under a blonde hairpiece and rubbed his eyes. Victor was a tidy man, everything in its correct pigeonhole, neatly alphabetized and consecutively numbered. The only cop in the memory of the department who actually enjoyed making out reports. When most men watched sports on television on weekends or relaxed around a resort swimming pool on vacations, reading Rex Burns detective novels, Victor reviewed files on unsolved cases. A diehard, he was more fanatical about tying up loose ends than obtaining a conviction. The Prospecteur case was unlike any he'd faced in his 18 years on the force. Three dead men falling out of the sky in an antique blimp didn't exactly lend itself to routine police investigation. Leads were non-existent. The three bodies in the morgue revealed no clues to where they had been hiding for a week and a half. He lowered his glasses and was attacking the photographs again when the desk phone buzzed. He lifted the receiver and said pensively, "Yes?" "You have a witness to see you about a statement," answered the receptionist. "Send him on back," said Victor. He closed the file containing the photographs and laid it on the metal desk, whose surface was antiseptic except for a small sign with his name and the telephone. He held the receiver to his ear as though receiving a call and swiveled sideways, looking across the spacious homicide office, keeping his eyes focused at an angle toward the door leading to the corridor. A uniformed receptionist appeared at the threshold and pointed in Victor's direction. A tall man nodded, eased past her, and approached. Victor gestured to a chair opposite the desk and began muttering in a one-way conversation with the dial tone. It was an old interrogation ploy that gave him an uninterrupted minute to inspect a witness or suspect and mentally construct a profile. Most important, it was an opportunity to observe habits and odd mannerisms that could be used for leverage later. The male seated across from Victor was about 37 or 38, approximately 6'3", weight 185, give or take 5 pounds, black hair tending to be a bit wavy, with no indication of gray. Skin darkened from year-round exposure to the sun. Eyebrows dark and slightly bushy. Straight, narrow nose, lips firm with corners turned up in a slight but fixed grin. Wearing light blue sports coat and off-white slacks. Pale yellow polo shirt with collar open. Good taste, casual but not ultra-expensive. Probably purchased at Saks rather than a plush men's store. Non-smoker, as there was no evidence of cigarette package bulge in coat or shirt. Arms were folded, suggesting calm and indifference. And the hands were narrow, long, and weathered. No rings or other jewelry, only an old orange-faced diver's watch with a heavy stainless steel band. This one didn't follow the general pattern. The others who had sat in that chair turned fidgety after a while. Some masked nervousness with arrogance. Most restlessly stared around the office, through the windows, at pictures on the walls, at the other officers working their cases, changing position, crossing and recrossing their legs. For the first time Victor could recall, he felt uncomfortable and at a disadvantage. His routine was sidetracked, his act rapidly washing out. The visitor wasn't the least bit ruffled. He stared at Victor with bemused interest through opaline green eyes that possessed a mesmeric quality. They seemed to pass right through the detective, and finding nothing of interest, examined the paint on the wall behind. Then they dropped to the telephone. "Most police departments use the Horizon communication system," he said in an even tone. "If you wish to speak to someone on the other end, I suggest you push a button for an open line." Victor looked down. One of his four buttons was lit but not punched. "You're very astute, Mr. Pitt, Dirk Pitt. If you're Lieutenant Victor, we had an appointment." "I'm Victor." He paused to replace the receiver in its cradle. You were the first person inside the control car of the Prospertia blimp?
That's right.
Thank you for coming in, especially so early on a Sunday. I'd appreciate your cooperation in clearing up a few questions.
Not at all. Will it take long?
20 minutes, maybe half an hour.
Do you have to be somewhere?
I'm booked on a plane for Washington in 2 hours.
Victor nodded.
I'll get you on your way in plenty of time. He pulled open a drawer and took out a portable tape recorder.
Let's go somewhere more private.
He led Pitt down a long hallway to a small interview room. The interior was Spartan, only a desk, 2 chairs, and an ashtray. Victor sat down and fed a new cassette into the recorder.
Mind if I put our conversation on tape? I'm a terrible note-taker. None of the secretaries can decipher my handwriting.
Pitt shrugged agreeably. Victor moved the machine to the center of the desk and pressed the red record button.
Your name?
Dirk Pitt.
Middle initial?
E for Eric.
Address?
266 Airport Place, Washington, D.C., 20001.
Telephone where you can be reached.
Pitt gave Victor the phone number of his office.
Occupation?
Special Projects Director for the National Underwater and Marine Agency.
Can you describe the event you witnessed on the afternoon of Saturday, October 20th?
Pitt told Victor of his sighting, the out-of-control blimp, during the sailboard marathon race, the mad ride while clinging to the mooring line, and the last-second capture only a few feet away from potential disaster, ending with his entry into the gondola.
Did you touch anything?
Only the ignition and battery switches.
And I laid my hand on the shoulder of the corpse seated at the navigator's table.
Nothing else?
The only other place I might have left a fingerprint was on the boarding ladder.
And the backrest of the co-pilot's seat, said Victor with a smug smile. No doubt when you leaned over and turned off the switches.
Fast work. Next time I'll wear surgical gloves.
The FBI was most cooperative.
I admire competence.
Did you take anything?
Pitt shot Victor a sharp look.
No.
Could anyone else have entered and removed any objects?
Pitt shook his head. After I left, the hotel security guards sealed off the gondola. The next person inside was a uniformed police officer.
Then what did you do?
I paid one of the hotel lifeguards to swim out and retrieve my sailboard. He owned a small pickup truck and was kind enough to run me back to the house where I was staying with friends.
In Miami?
Coral Gables.
Mind if I ask what you were doing in town?
I wound up an offshore exploration project for NUMA and decided to take a week's vacation.
Did you recognize any of the bodies?
Not damned likely. I couldn't identify my own father in that condition.
Any idea who they might be?
I assume one of them was Raymond LeBaron.
You're familiar with the disappearance of the Prospertier?
The news media covered the disappearance in great depth. Only a backwoods recluse could have missed it.
Any pet theories on where the blimp and its crew were buried for 10 days?
I haven't a clue.
Not even a wild idea, Victor persisted.
Could be a colossal publicity stunt. A media campaign to promote LeBaron's publishing empire.
Interest grew in Victor's eyes.
Go on.
Or maybe an ingenious scheme to manipulate LeBaron conglomerate stock prices. Sell large blocks before he disappears and buy when prices tumble afterward. And sell again when they rise during his resurrection.
How do you explain their deaths?
The plot backfired.
Why?
Ask your coroner.
I'm asking you.
They probably ate tainted fish on whatever deserted island they hung out on, said Pitt, tiring of the game.
How would I know? If you want a scenario, hire a screenwriter.
The interest in Victor's eyes blinked out. He relaxed in his chair and sighed dejectedly.
I thought for a second you might have something. A gimmick that could get me and the department off the hook.
But your theory went down the drain like all the others.
I'm not surprised, said Pitt with an indifferent grin.
How were you able to switch off the power within seconds of entering the control car, Victor asked, bringing the interrogation back on track. After piloting 20 different aircraft during service in the Air Force and civilian life, I knew where to look. Victor appeared satisfied. One more question, Mr. Pitt. When you first spotted the blimp, from what direction was she flying?
She was drifting with the wind out of the northeast.
Victor reached over and turned off the recorder.
That should do it.
Can I reach you at your office number during the day?
If I'm not there, my secretary can track me down.
Thank you for your help.
Nothing substantial, I'm afraid, said Pitt.
We have to pull on every thread. Lots of pressure with LeBaron being the big shot that he was. This has to be the weirdest case the department's ever encountered.
I don't envy you finding a solution.
Pitt glanced at his watch and rose from his chair.
I'd better get a move on for the airport.
Victor stood and reached across the desk to shake hands. If you should dream up another plot line, Mr. Pitt, please give me a call. I'm always interested in a good fantasy.
Pitt paused in the doorway and turned, a fox-like expression on his face.
You want a lead, Lieutenant?
Run this one up the flagpole.
Airships need helium for their lift. An old antique like the Prospertier must have required a couple hundred thousand cubic feet of gas to get her in the air. After a week, enough would have leaked out to keep her grounded. Do you follow?
Depends on where you're heading.
There is no way the blimp could have materialized off Miami unless an experienced crew with the necessary supplies reinflated the hull 48 hours before.
Victor had the look of a man about to be baptized.
What are you suggesting?
That you look for a friendly neighborhood service station that can pump 200,000 cubic feet of helium.
Then Pitt turned into the hallway and was gone.